Good evening. Can't tell very well, maybe you can see it better on the screen, but that's the picture of the lady reaching out to touch Jesus' garment in Mark chapter 5. So we're going to be looking at that tonight. By way of an introduction, James, who was the Lord's brother, made a statement in James chapter 1 that I believe is key to understanding Mark chapter 5. James said that pure religion in the sight of God the Father is to visit the orphans and the widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained from the world. And I wonder if James, being the Lord's brother, had this set of stories from Mark chapter 5 in mind when he crafted that idea. And I love that statement because it cuts against the grain in both ways. There are some churches sometimes that are very, very engaged with the texts about being loving toward the world, loving toward the neighbors, and yet they, in that kind of love, allow in various kinds of perversions of that love, and they are not focused any longer on being spiritually pure. And so they would say, we need to love, we need to love. That's all that Jesus cared about. And then spiritual purity goes to the wayside. And then there are other churches that may be very concerned with being doctrinally accurate in every respect, and so focused on it that there's almost a loss of compassion and a heart for those who are lost, and that goes to the wayside. And in the pure religion that James is talking about, God is concerned with loving those who are hurting, those who are oftentimes forgotten, and also concerned with making sure that we are pure before God and that the enemy is not living in our hearts or in our midst. And so as a church, we need to strike that balance. That's really what it's about. True holiness is an adoration of the Father and a desire to live according to His standards, and it is also a desire to love those who are oftentimes forgotten. And so we need to be both of those. And that's one thing that I can say, you know, no church is perfect, and certainly we here at Oldham Lane need to be challenged and we need to grow in many respects, but that is one thing that I love about this church, is that there is, I think, that balance is at play. This is a very solid church biblically, and I mean that in the sense of, I sit in on these elders' meetings and I listen to them talking about direction for the church. One of the things that is always behind any decision is, what does the Bible say? Is this righteous? Is this permitted by God? What have we been instructed to do? And so that's there. And then also within the eldership and within the members, and I'm fortunate enough in my role that I get to see it behind the scenes often, but so many members that are doing things behind closed doors, you'd never see them, they never come up on stage, but they are very concerned for those that are sick, those that are dying, those that are hurting in many respects, and they're doing things behind the scenes. And I've seen so many just at the ready jumping to be at someone's service. And that's a beautiful thing. I just want to commend you on that, but also encourage you to continue to do that. So open in your Bibles to Mark chapter 5. And this first story, I'm not going to say much about it because I really want to focus in on the second part of Mark 5. But it is very much a part of that overall pure religion. Mark chapter 5. They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes, and when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. So this man had been defiled. And my perspective on these things is that Nowhere in history has God allowed somebody to be overtaken completely by an evil spirit such that they themselves would be evil without there being some measure of complicity or willingness. So here's a person who is, it's not like somebody was living faithful to God and walking in faith and walking in the light and God allowed a demon to overtake them. The backstory's not given, but here's a man with an unclean spirit. And so you can use your imagination. What environments had he been in? Where had he gone to where this was a part of his life? This was an unclean man, and by virtue of that, he was filled up with an unclean spirit. So he'd gone to these lengths, and yet Jesus is concerned. His compassion wishes to remove that. And he was at a point of no return himself. Sometimes there are people who themselves reach a point of no return where they need a strong community and the power of prayer and really the gospel of Jesus to come into that situation and to pull them out of it. They cannot get out themselves, but the elements Jesus is promoting here, we can do. And in fact, we're called to do that, where people can be called out of great darkness. But here's this man who lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he'd often been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces, and no one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And by the way, that is an image. If you know, Satan is an amazing marketer. He's really good at saying, hey, I have a product that you should buy, and it's going to give you all of these things that you desire to have. He's really good at that. He can make everything look really good. But in stories like this, you see the end game of Satan. He doesn't want people to truly have pleasure. He does not wish for that. What he truly desires is for people to be so bound up by various vices that they are eventually in this point where in their minds they're bound to him, but they no longer have any pleasure. In fact, they're self-harm and they're hurting themselves. That's the ultimate trajectory Satan has in mind. He just borrows from God's pleasures in the meantime to get us to that point. So that's where this man is. He is at a point of despair, and he is bound up by Satan. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him. He wished to be free from this. And crying out with a loud voice, he said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he was saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." You can see the desperation of this situation. And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs, let us enter them." So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs. And the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned in the sea. Now, what I believe is happening here is that Jesus is ultimately destroying these evil forces. So in the Jewish mentality, demons don't like water. There's a lot in water that is cleansing and removing of wickedness. There's all kinds of Old Testament stories pointing to that. Jesus, in a parable about demons, he said if they go out of a person, they go to waterless places, seeking rest, and they find none, and they go back to the place from which they came. But I believe Jesus is destroying these by immersing them in water, descriptive of the many times where wickedness and dross was removed in water. It happens at baptism. It happened when Israel left behind their old history as they crossed the Jordan. It happened to the whole world during the flood, where the water was washing away of the wickedness. And so this is what's happening. And you see here, Jesus is concerned with the removal of wickedness, and we should be too. If there's sin, if there is wickedness, we should crucify it and do everything we can to drive it out by the power of the gospel, by the power of the Spirit, by the prayer of faith, and by a mind that is set on Jesus. We should do that. And so again, pure religion before God is to keep oneself undefiled from the world. We should have a desire to let the world and its all of the attractions within it that are contrary to Christ, those need to be pushed out of our homes. We should not be viewing them in our various media outlets. We shouldn't be watching them in movies or television or finding entertainment in them. Those things need to be removed from our lives. But we're not disconnected from the world. Some people would wish to remove the wickedness, and then they would say, I'm going to go live in a community all by myself and not have anything to do with anyone else. Jesus removes wickedness by himself being the light. Light shines into darkness, it exposes it, and then the darkness flees. Jesus always does this. And so he is concerned with the evil spirits. Get him out of here. But then the other side of the story, this compassion side. And one of the things that stands out to me, I've been reading through Mark's gospel with our children at night, just before bed. That's the part of the Bible we're in. And I'm really amazed by how often Mark takes multiple stories and has a deeper meaning in them. I showed you last week something from Mark chapter 8 that is related to this, but he's not just giving stories and then running onto a new subject. He's making a point. There's a bigger point being made. And there's something really cool that happens between Mark 5:21 and the end of the chapter. And I want you to see it, then I'm just going to point it out, and then the lesson is going to be yours. When Jesus had crossed again, this is verse 21, when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, my little daughter, now notice that, my little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live. And he went with him. Now, if you were to take time and actually meditate over this moment, imagine being, don't just rush by it, but imagine being a father who's in this this predicament where he says, my little daughter. Our little daughters, that connection is, it's unlike anything else. And I remember when our little daughter was on a ventilator and you couldn't think of anything else. It was, and she was at the point of death, cardiac arrest, and really on the very edge. And, there were many prayers said before the throne about our little daughter. And, you can read that and I think you read that and you immediately feel compassion, right? Dad with his little girl. Look how the story goes on. And by the way, the story is going to be interrupted. In every one of the Gospels that tells this account, this interruption happens. So it's not like, this really is pointed out in each of the Gospels, and it's striking. It's amazing, really. A great crowd followed him and thronged about him. So he's going to Jairus' house, and it says, there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years. And who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She would have been unclean by the ceremonial laws and would not have been permitted into certain areas because of that. She would have been kept at a distance and would have been, would have been really ostracized. She was not made any better by the physicians. She'd heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, if I touch even his garments, I will be made well. And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he'd entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child isn't dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kumi," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. Now, there's a couple of things. First of all, there's a connection between this little girl and this woman who touched Jesus' garment. This Mark makes the point of telling us that she was 12 years old. And how long had this woman suffered with a discharge of blood? For 12 years. And so you can see, okay, he's making a point of showing this number. For the entirety of this little girl's life, that's the length of time that this older woman had this discharge of blood. But really, the key to the story is in the fact that this father came to Jesus and he said, "My daughter, my little daughter, is at the point of death." And we feel that. We can recognize there's a little girl, she's at the point of death, and Jesus goes and he heals her. And it's especially tragic when she dies, but Jesus heals her, his little daughter. What did Jesus expressly call this woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years? Well, look up in verse 34. Jesus said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." What are we to learn from this? What we're to see is that this person who you may not immediately feel that same level of compassion for whatever reason, social differences, whatever, maybe just the level of our own emotional, how much... For whatever reason, there are some that we would not see as much, or we would not feel as much compassion for. And yet Jesus reveals that this woman who society had forgotten was to him the same way as a little girl would be to her father. And this woman was Jesus' daughter. Jesus is the creator of the universe. And so when you go into James and James says pure religion is to visit orphans, those are children without parents, and widows, those are often forgotten. Pure religion is to visit these in their distress and to keep oneself unstained from the world. You see this amazingly showcased in Mark chapter 5 by Jesus. He's concerned with removing wickedness from the world, and we should be too. But at the same time, he's very concerned with showing love to somebody that would have oftentimes been forgotten, and we should do the same. Just as an encouragement to you, there's a lot of good that goes on here. Oftentimes, we have members in the hospital, and we have elderly persons that maybe don't have as many connections. There's no one person that can visit and be the contact point for every single person in a church of 600 plus people. But what if every single member committed to looking after somebody and checking in on somebody and making that a priority? It would build fellowship, surely. It would encourage greatly, and I believe that it would show to Jesus how deeply we really believe in him and how much we love who he is. Let's be a church, as I know that we are, but let me promote this and that we build on this, a church that keeps ourselves unstained from the world, but also visits the orphans and the widows in their distress. If you have any need at all, if you wish to give your life to Jesus, you can come down and let that need be known while we stand and while we sing.